Hello, and welcome to the Legion Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics. This is Legion Spotlight number 43, and we're continuing our look at the Legion of Superhero comics, this time from 1968. Next up is Superboy 148 and Superboy's Greatest Gamble. Now, this was released on April 4th, 1968, written by Leo Dorfman, art by Kurt Swan. It's a 13-page story, full-page interior cover, and a third-of-the-page ad at the end. And this is very much a Superboy story that only tangentially connects to the Legion. And the basic premise is Superboy has left the Kents and seems to not care about them at all to the point of thinking they deserve to die. He has taken on a new identity as the rough and tumble Chuck Kibbe, K-I-B-B-E-E. I'm curious how many different of these short-term aliases Superboy has had over the decades. But he has effectively run away from home with the Kents, removed all of his lab stuff, but left his attic Superboy museum. And I don't recall having seen that before, but again, I'm only hitting the Legion stories, not all of the Superboy stuff. And as Chuck, he moves to Casino City. Now, it's got a whopping population of 10,986 people, which by today's standards, in my opinion, seems like really tiny. But it's a small city that looks like a coastal town in a harbor with a big casino presence. So he goes to what seems to be almost a carnival type thing where they've got the knock the bottles down, win a prize, and other games of chance like that. And of course, he's Superboy. He's able to win these no problem, even though they should be next to impossible. The bottles are weighted, so you can only knock a few over, but he's got super strength. There's another where there are balloons, some with dollar signs on them, and there's a fan causing him to move around. Pop him with the dart, you get a prize. Of course, he's able to do that no problem. And then there's another where it's a vertical roulette wheel, but it's rigged with a magnetic brake. And he plays the game, loses the game, basically rips the thing off the wall saying, "Oh, your cheat didn't fool me." Talks to the people behind the booth, and it's like, "I'm looking for crooked people to pose as my foster parents." Okay, that's kind of weird. They do that, they go to a casino, start winning big, and it turns out, when they're at the roulette wheel at the casino winning big, that the guy running it had been jailed by Superboy a few years earlier, realizes the only way they were winning was by cheating with Superboy powers, and he's like, "I'm going to go blow up the Kents." And it comes down to a game of chance. Put on the lead goggles, tell me if this card is red or black, or your parents die. And Superboy is able to determine, even with a lead blindfold, that it's black because of how deep the ink is or whatever. Says it's red. It's like, "Oh, we're going to kill the Kents." And the Kents are apparently monitoring Superboy. They've been taken over by electric beings of some sort. And we get a flashback explaining all of this and how the aliens in the Kents' bodies drill down to the Earth core, turn the planet to a flame world so their race can live here. Which is why he had to clear out the lab and the Superboy robots. They were using that to dig down. And that's also why Superboy had to hypnotize the roulette wheel guy to threaten the Kents. And the electric aliens are using the electrical lines to go hop into the new foster parents. And when they do that, this is where the story gets kind of really wild. They hop in. There are like these green rings around these electric aliens, and the wife is saying, "It's working! Amplify your cryogenic force, Mintar!" And it turns out, not only does that destroy the electric aliens, but that the guy is apparently the parents of Polar Boy, and I guess this is both parents, so mom and dad of Polar Boy, whom we've never seen before, but we get the backstory that Thar, where that race is from, they create mental vibrations to create cold and neutralize heat. I mean, that's essentially Polar Boy's powers. But summoning Polar Boy's parents that we'd never met just felt out of the blue. And then there's a final panel at the end where the Kensers like, it's so weird, Superboy. We went to bed one night and we woke up a week later and fully dressed. And it's like, oh, I'll explain later. So not only does the Legion not show up, the subs don't even show up, but the parents of one of the subs show up. And that's the connection. So not a bad story, but it's one of those figure it out before the end sort of stories with zero clues and just an explanation at the end. So it's literally the butler did it. Wait, there was a butler? Kind of a story. Not bad, but certainly far, far, far from essential reading for the Legion. But I'm trying to include these sorts of tangential things just because I can. Or at least as many of us I'm aware of. There may be others that my research didn't pull up. Because again, I'm not reading all the Superboy stories or everywhere else there could be a tangential connection. But kind of interesting to see Polar Boy's parents here. I don't recall them ever getting mentioned anywhere in the Legion stories proper, but I could be wrong on that. And if I come across that, I'll try to remember to point it out. So once again, that's Superboy's Greatest Gamble from Superboy 148. Next up is Adventure Comics 369 and Mordru the Merciless. This was released on April 30th, 1968, written by Jim Shooter, art by Kurt Swan. 13-page story, full-page interior cover, third of a page ad on the final story, part one of more. It starts with a couple of Legionnaires, Mon-El, a dazed Superboy, Shadow Lass, and Duo Damsel, running to the Time Chamber to use the Time Cube, not the Time Sphere, the Time Cube, to escape Mordru, the Dark Lord. Now, the Time Cube is a big cube-like box with a almost throne-like chair in it. You can go through one at a time, and this gets people back in time. This kind of reminds me almost of the transmatter cube that the Justice League would use in, I want to say, the 80s or whatever, to get between worlds. But I'm pretty sure we've seen the Time Cube before. I think that's what Ron Vidar had used at one point, but I could be wrong. But again, not the canonical Time Sphere, where they could have gone as a group. Anyways, they need to escape Mordru. They wind up back in Superboy's time in Smallville. Now, using the Time Cube, you just wind up there. You don't have the cube with you, so no return trip. Now, of course, Superboy and Mon-El, they can fly through the time stream. Not a big deal. Now, once they get there, this is where the story gets a little weird, because Shadow Lass does about a 3-panel flashback of how the story started, where she was about to open this vault in the Legion HQ, and it was in one of the sub-basements. Mon-El rushes in, no, don't. And it's like, well, what's in there? Mordru. And then Mon-El launches into a narration of a flashback that goes for 3.5 pages. And this is a flashback inside a flashback. And this is Mordru's backstory. He had basically conquered the universe and had been forgotten about until he came back wanting Earth, fought the Legion, and gets trapped in this airless steel block by Mon-El and Superboy. And that's inside of this other vault. But the deal is, because it's airless, Mordru fell into a deep coma, but Shadowlass apparently opened it enough, a little air got in, and Mordru's escaping. Now, this is Mordru's first appearance. So this Mon-El narrated flashback in a flashback is kind of sort of a retcon, kind of sort of not, because it doesn't really contradict anything that had been established, but it establishes they'd already fought Mordru and we'd never seen that. And it's funny because the flashback events are similar but not exactly like the pre-Zero Hour section of the Wikipedia page on Mordru. Now I'd have to reread Mordru's appearance in the post-crisis pre-Zero Hour continuity to see if it's an accurate synopsis of a retelling of the original story in that continuity. And that's one of my beefs with whenever they reboot the Legion. There are certain storylines they kind of have to retell. Origins of certain characters, villains included, a couple of big battles, some stuff like that. And they each are a little bit tweaked because of they've changed the character names, their backstories, their personalities, or whatever. It's never just a complete, authentic retelling or accurate retelling of the original story. Because you've changed the universe around it, it kind of can't be. But it was kind of interesting looking at the Wikipedia page because this story as such isn't in the kind of original pre-crisis section where it really ought to be, but kind of wild. Anyways, Legionnaires are hiding in ancient Smallville, ancient 20th century, and they're worried that Mordru's going to come looking because it's an obvious place to come looking for them. So we've got three Legionnaires. They need to have secret identities. Mon-El basically revives his Bob Cobb brush salesman, cousin of the Kents, identity. So that's him. Duo Damsel passes herself off as a distant relative of Chief Parker and his wife, actually his wife's family, and stays there. Now, Shadow Lass, who's blue head to toe, has a makeup job done, and she winds up posing as a foreign exchange student, Betsy Norcross, and stays with the Langs. Now, Mordru does wind up searching Smallville for these Legionnaires using some kind of search spell or whatever that looks like a big shadow. And Shadow Lass is able to protect the Legionnaires from that spell with her shadow stuff. What's interesting is she's doing that over at Lana Lang's house. And, of course, Duo Damsel is over at Chief Parker's house. And over at the Kents, we've got Superboy and Mon-El. But Shadow Lass is able to shadow them at those locations. So she's able to use her powers at a distance and remotely. I don't know how often that ever gets used again, but obviously convenient here. There is a comment that this spell not only is searching for the Legionnaires, but leaves the citizens of Smallville kind of as tools for Mordru, so if you spot the Legionnaires, he'll know. Duo Damsel, as they're having this late meeting, has to get back to the Parker house. Superboy's like, just go through the tunnel and stuff, you'll be fine. And while she's crawling through the tunnel and getting back to the Parkers, she's got a couple of thought balloons. She's a little miffed, she can't even get Superboy to walk her home. But she realizes it's kind of silly because 30th century history, she knows who Superboy is going to marry after he becomes Superman, but still kind of pining for him. But even more interesting is there's a line about Shadow Lass where Duo Damsel's like, she finally figured out her crush on Brainiac 5 wasn't going anywhere with Supergirl in the picture, so looks like she's going after Mon-El now, which is a canonical pairing for the Legion stuff. But interesting to have that set up essentially by a third party in another location, where, Shadow Lass had just had a conversation with Mon-El, but not in a this-looks-like-a-romantic entanglement sort of a way. So, kind of interesting there, but this whole thing basically ends with it's morning, and Shadow Lass is going to wind up going to Smallville High or whatever with Lana Lang, end of the first part. All of this is basically, I think, to set up a second part of the story, where they're in 20th century Smallville and Mordru is hunting them. So all set up, really no payoff in my opinion, and the flashback inside of a flashback was kind of wild and whatnot. Not a bad story, certainly worth reading given Mordru's one of the bigger threats to the Legion over the years. But again, it's part one of at least a two-part thing. And in and of itself, it's not overly satisfying. Hopefully they land the ending in the second part. So once again, that's Mordru the Merciless from Adventure Comics 369. Next up is Adventure Comics 369 in part 2, Mordru and the Mob. Still released on April 30th, 1968. Still written by Jim Shooter with art by Kurt Swan. 11-page story. It picks up as Lana is walking Betsy, Shadow Lass, to school. They see Clark and Marie Elkins do a damsel, so Lana introduces Betsy to them. They all talk for a bit. And there's a bit where there's a footnote reminding us that, as Insect Queen, Lana belongs to the Legion Reserves. But she's never met Duo Damsel, so she doesn't recognize her, which is a good thing to point out. Now, of course, Shadow Lass is a new member of the Legion and hasn't really had time to meet Lana before this either. But suddenly, there is a tidal wave destroying Smallville, a stampede of gigantic monsters, a fire burning up half the town, and they're like, well, what do we do? But Clark sees Bob Cobb, Mon-El, walking as if nothing's happening. He's like, it's obviously an illusion to get us to reveal ourselves. And Clark's like, well, I think so, but... And when he's about to kind of hop into action, the illusion stops. And they all head to school. Bob doesn't. He's apparently enough older and a salesman, so he doesn't have to. But Lana, Clark, Duo Damsel, and Shadow Lass all head there. Shadow Lass is getting introduced as Betsy Norcross. Somebody's like, oh, she's got blue skin. Where are you from, Mars? So Clark uses his fountain pen to squirt some blue ink on somebody else to cover the, oh, that must be what happened to Betsy sort of a deal. And we start getting a few other things. Like there is a after-school two trucks about to collide. Again, they can't reveal themselves out of fear of Mordru would find them. Duo Damsel takes a school sign, says slow or whatever, that's kind of an arch thing, throws it under one of the truck's wheels. It causes it to flip out of the way of the other one, and she's able to do that in her civilian identity as Maria and save the day. It's a little bit of a gimmick, but whatever. And there's a lot of, well, Superboy normally would have done this sort of a deal. Going back to the romantic subplot type stuff, Shadow Lass is thinking, well, Superboy finally acknowledges Lonu and stuff, and if you only stop thinking of her as Legionnaire as a girl, followed by Clark's, oh, I never realized how pretty she was before kind of thing. A few days later, there is a jewel thief who's got kind of a human fly aspect. He's got suction cups crawling up the side of the wall. Superboy would save the day on that, and it's getting to where the people are noticing Superboy's not around. And that happens for a week, and suddenly, quote-unquote, King Carter and his gang come to town and take over. And they've got Tommy guns, almost cliche mobster mobile with the sideboards they can be on and stuff. And it's like, oh, we're taking over. This is my kingdom now. And we'll cut the phone lines. You can't let anyone know. They do that by shooting him with Tommy guns. It's like, okay, that's a good shot. But he's basically set himself up as king, collecting tributes from everybody. And Clark's like, his father's even doing it. And it's like, well, without Superboy to back us up, what are we going to do? So the four Legionnaires meet with Pa Kent and organize essentially a resistance. It's like, yeah, they've got Tommy guns or machine guns, but if we act together, we can do stuff. Next morning, group of people confront King Carter long enough for people on the roofs to pelt them with vegetables. Fight ensues. In the chaos, Mon-El and Superboy can kind of use their heat vision to disable the guns and some stuff like that. Duo Damsel was able to fight one or two of them. Anyways, the citizens basically take over and put all these guys in jail. But then the Legionnaires are thinking, you know, we told the Smallville citizens not to hide from their troubles, yet that's exactly what we're doing. So they're going to head back, and we get this shot of Duo Damsel in costume leaving the Parkers. With a, you're going back to which century? From Chief Parker, and his wife is like, well, say hello to your mother for us. They gather near the Kents' home. They're about to use the remote control to the time cube to get them back. But before they can do that, and of course Lana is watching from next door, seeing the Legionnaires, she's still under the spell of Mordru, so she's essentially his eyes and ears. Mordru is coming, and we end on a splash page of a giant Mordru confronting Duo Damsel, Superboy, Mon-El, and Shadow Lass. So, as much as I was saying the first part was all set up, the second part is all too. All this issue did was set up the next issue's fight between four Legionnaires and Mordru in 20th century Smallville. There's a little bit of character stuff here and there, but given how much of the first part of the story was flashbacks to establish things, and likely how much of the first part of next issue's first story is going to be the same, it kind of feels like this entire issue was almost optional reading, unless you want to have the first appearance of Mordru, which I don't think is required by any stretch. But again, given the era this is written in, the accessible storytelling style, I expect at least a page or two, possibly more, in the first part of the next issue to recap everything that's relevant in this issue, which it'll probably be able to do fairly succinctly, including Mordru's origin, the flashback and the flashback from the first part, etc. Probably only need 2-3 panels to cover this story's part. So, not bad, but honestly, it's feeling a little disappointing because I didn't feel they landed the ending of this issue. I can see where people would have read all this thinking that's all we're getting. Gotta wait till next issue to get the meat of the story. It's also worth pointing out the final caption is promising us that Pete Ross and Lana Lang as Insect Queen will be joining the fight. And there was no sign of Pete Ross at all in this issue. Lana, of course, was a main part of it. So getting the reminder she was Insect Queen here and her showing up next time should be fun. But again, this issue feels like optional reading. So once again, that's part two, Mordru and the Mob from Adventure Comics 369. Next up is Adventure Comics 370 and the Devil's Jury. Now, this was released on May 28th, 1968, written by Jim Shooter, art by Kurt Swan, 13-page story, full-page interior cover, third of a page ad on the final story. And the story itself starts with Mordru attacking the Legionnaires. Much to my surprise, there wasn't really a recap of the previous issue, which seems fairly unusual for the time frame. But the Legionnaires escape by Superboy and Mon-El kind of tunneling down with Duodamsel and Shadowlass just literally grabbing their capes and getting pulled down along with them. And they need to convince Mordru they're just not around. They head to Superboy's lab. He quickly builds a device to hypnotize himself, the Legionnaires, and the Kents to prevent Mordru from finding them through their thoughts. But the effects will only last an hour. That should be long enough. The Legionnaires change back into civilian identities. They do the hypnosis thing, and it's like, well, what are we all doing here? Shadowlass, now thinking she's Betsy Norcross, the exchange student, goes back to the Lang household, sees Lana, who's somehow been released from Mordru's spell of spying and such, sort of inexplicably, but needed to happen so the story could progress. Presumably the same thing happens to Pete Ross. But we see Duodamsel back at the Parker household. We see Mon-El back as Bob Cobb, not able to access his superpowers because he's forgotten about them. Meanwhile, Mordru is searching Smallville for these Legionnaires, somehow magically, telepathically taps into everyone's brains. It's more like he's a psychic than a sorcerer at this point, which kind of annoys me. But he picks up on Chief Parker and his wife having seen Duodamsel in costume, speaking of the 30th century, the student from the previous issue having seen the blue patch on Betsy Norcross's arm, so she could be Shadowlass, Pete Ross having discovered Superboy as Clark Kent, but when he scans the memories of Clark and Marie Elkins and Betsy Norcross and Bob Cobb, there's like no memory of any of this. Now, why he did it for Bob, I don't know, because there's no mention of Mon-El at this point, but he's like, did they plant these thoughts in these strangers to throw me off? Or either way, they've still got to be in Smallville. We then learn that Mordru's trying to read their thoughts erased the post-hypnotic suggestion which was going to restore their memories, so we no longer have the Legionnaires for all intents and purposes. Mordru, not giving up, summons his armies from the 30th century, which happens quickly and effectively. He then somehow magically seals the time lanes so nobody else can come or go from the period. So these Legionnaires are trapped and no reinforcements are coming. He wants to limit the area his forces need to search, so he basically sends down magical lightning bolts that create a barrier around Smallville, cutting it free from the surrounding landscape. He puts an impenetrable shield above it and lifts the whole thing into space, almost like Argo City on Krypton and such. And the Kents and Clark learn about this, and he's like, well, what are we going to do? And everyone's like, well, if only Superboy was here, but we haven't seen him for weeks. And, of course, the Legionnaires don't remember anything. So Mordru's forces attack, and they quickly find all of the teenage girls, including the prime suspects of Betsy Norcross and Marie Elkins, with the, if they're Legionnaires, we'll get that out of them. Lana fights back and protects them. None of the three use any power, so it's like, they've got spirit, but no power, so they can't possibly be the Legionnaires. Similar thing happens with Clark not using any powers, even when his father is threatened. And Pete's like, what's going on? Why didn't Clark use his Superboy powers? Ah, he must have forgotten, and I need to do something. So Pete has Lana meet him at an abandoned house, tells her he knows Lana's a Legion reservist, he's an honorary Legionnaire, Superboy needs their help, but he'll have to tell Lana Superboy's secret identity. And she's like, well, why would he tell you? And Pete's like, he didn't. Pete is actually drawn here so much like Jimmy Olsen, it's funny. But Pete not only has to prove Clark is Superboy to Lana, but also to Clark. So Lana, using her Insect Queen bio ring, basically goes and kidnaps Clark. She turns into a fly girl, a caterpillar queen, a butterfly, and then a beetle girl. And using a mirror and a pair of scissors, Clark is able to see Pete try and fail to cut Clark's hair, with the scissors breaking in the process. The hair is invulnerable, how, and then boom, he remembers he's Superboy. Superboy flies off. He grabs the hypnosis ray and restores the memory of the other Legionnaires. They all gather at that house, and it's like, ah, here's the plan to stop Mordru. It requires all six of us. End of chapter. And this feels, one, I was surprised there was no recap, but it feels, again, like this is all set up to an ending that just keeps getting stalled and put off. So I'm assuming it's all going to end in the next story in this issue, but I don't think it goes to another issue after this, but who knows? Who knows? The other thing that annoyed me with this is there is no Devil's Jury in the story, and the story was The Devil's Jury. So they're naming some of these stories based on the larger story, not the chapter they're telling, which I think is just poor form, but that's what's going on. I'm really hoping they land the ending when they do decide to end this, which I'm assuming is the next chapter, but we'll find out. So for such a, I was going to say pivotal story for Mordru, but really for Mordru's introduction, so much of this is set up, and not even set up just of Mordru. It's just, it's all over the place. We've gotten better stories out of Shooter before, but I can see at this point why the decision to end the Legion feature in Adventure Comics after 380, I can start to see why that was happening. This feels decompressed even for the era. It didn't have the accessibility that was standard for the era, and it didn't have the payoff in the individual story chunks. So we'll see what happens in the next part, but once again, that's The Devil's Jury from Adventure Comics 370. Next up is Adventure Comics 370 and Part 2, The Condemned Crusaders. Still released on May 28th, 1968, still written by Jim Shooter, art by Kurt Swan. 12-page story that does wrap up this whole Mordru thing. We pick up, essentially, the next morning as the Legionnaires are getting ready to strike back. Part of their plan involves Duo Damsel splitting in two and Pete Ross impersonating Superboy, using his Legion flight ring and such. And we see Superboy, Mon-El, Shadowlass, and Duo Damsel toppling one of the tanks of Mordru's forces and attacking. And they do okay, but they get hit by magic rays with their blasters of the army and stuff, so magic blasts. And the four basically get captured. They get taken to Mordru. Now, as they're being taken, we do see Superboy, Shadowlass, and Insect Queen, and we learn the Duo Damsel was playing both herself and Shadowlass, and that Pete was Superboy, as we knew, and that Mon-El was doing all the heavy lifting, quite literally, in that. Now, once the captured Legionnaires get to Mordru and stuff, the others attack, so Shadowlass casts everything in shadow. Of course, Superboy and Mon-El can see in the dark, as can Shadowlass, of course, it's her powers, but Insect Queen, as a nocturnal insect, can also do that. So they're about to take down Mordru, but Mordru is all-powerful and takes them down. So he summons a courtroom, and they've got the greatest criminals of the 30th century, none of whom I've heard of. So Dorzak, who's a murderer, Koldan, a traitor, Thrun, a saboteur, and Galgro, an assassin. There is a comment Mordru makes that for some reason the Fatal Five couldn't make it, and I'm like, well, why not? You've got all sorts of powers, so I don't know. That seemed to be maybe an editorial mandated speech balloon just to cover they've established the Fatal Five with the greatest criminals of the 30th century. Some guy named Raythor is going to be the prosecutor. Pete, now magically out of costume, is going to be the defense counselor. And the crime is basically that the Legionnaires have ended the careers of the Time Trapper, Universo, Dr. Regulus, Dr. Mandus Morlow, the Devil's Dozen, and, of course, Mordru himself. And Pete's defense is like, well, yeah, they did all that to protect the universe from Mordru. When he tells the jury that if Mordru gets control of the universe, everybody would be his stooge. So you don't want that, do you? And, of course, they are unfazed, the jury. But good try from Pete. Jury, of course, reaches a verdict that the defendants are guilty on all counts. They're going to be sentenced to life imprisonment in the Devil's Island of Space. But Raythor says, these are not ordinary defenders. They should have a special doom. Let me prepare one. So he does, and they're going to be entombed in a vault, just like Mordru, so poetic justice. But they must not escape, of course. So the vault is lead-lined, kryptonite-coated, triple-steel-framed, inertion-sealed. Nothing could get out. be a slow, agonizing death. And to ensure that, there will be ample air for them to breathe, but the heroes will die of starvation and thirst as the kryptonite and lead slowly kill Superboy and Mon-El. So Mordru's pretty happy with that. They get buried into a pit. As that's happening, Superboy's realizing, wait, the kryptonite's not real. I'm not getting weakened, and the lead's not bothering Mon-El, even though the serum that protects him from that has worn off, which in and of itself is a little dicey because I would think there'd be enough lead around otherwise to cause Mon-El problems. But they realize the whole thing has been faked and that Raythor was actually swayed by Pete's speech about Mordru enslaving everybody. Now, we learn that Mordru was a colleague of Raythor on the Council of Wizards on the planet Xerox. That's with a Z-E-R-O-X, not an X-E-R-O-X, so not a photocopier at this point, although I'm curious when that brand came into being. Anyways, Mordru had discovered a way to steal the Council of Wizards' powers. He became near omnipotent and basically enslaved Raythor as a lackey to torment him. So Raythor used what little power he had to fake the vaults, all that kind of stuff. He tells the Legionnaires to flee, and at that point, Mordru comes in, vaporizes the guy, and saps the superpowers out of the Legionnaires, entraps them, and is about to kill them. And as he's doing that, he's growing and all of this. He's using his great powers, but the cavern walls are unable to withstand all of this and collapse around him, entombing Mordru, which is his great weakness, apparently. The Legionnaires get their powers back once Mordru was done in, so they're able to dig their way out. Superboy grabs the hypnosis ray, makes Lana forget his secret identity. He's about to do that to Pete, but Mon-El grabs the device, turns it on Superboy, makes Superboy forget Pete knows or has ever known Superboy's secret identity. And Pete's like, well, why? It's like, oh, call it a reward. But there's a thought balloon. It's like, well, Pete grows up and saves Superman's life because he knows his identity. So basically, all the pieces get put back together. The Legionnaires get back to the 30th century. Everybody there is fine. You know, Invisible Kid, Ultra Boy, Dream Girl, and stuff. And they're like, but Mordru said he'd gotten rid of you. Well, it turns out Dream Girl had a vision a few hours prior to that, that Mordru was going to attack. They contact the White Witch, Dream Girl's sister. White Witch uses a counter spell to prevent Mordru's attack from harming the clubhouse or the Legionnaires. Princess Projector creates an illusion that makes him think he succeeded, and the rest of the story kicked off as was. Okay, not bad. We do get a footnote pointing out that the White Witch is not a Legionnaire, first appeared in Adventures 351. The final panel, though, was Mon-El. It's like, well, I'll be darned to think all the trouble we had dodging Mordru. How ironic, he was fooled by three girls. It's like, wow, that was a sexist and demeaning comment. And I get, hey, Jim Shooter was 14 at the time, thereabouts, give or take a few years. It was the late 60s, so times were different back then. Not that that excuses anything. But even if we give Shooter a little bit of leeway because of his youth, the editors let this go by. Granted, comics were being read by boys, predominantly not girls at the time. Still, this is the sort of thing that I think would probably not get into a lot of modern comics these days, or if it did, there'd be a lot more comment about it. So I found that a little off-putting in terms of really, and the art not so great in that last panel. The thing that really irked me with this is it took us two issues, four parts, to get to this ending. And it literally ends with Mordru winning and then accidentally defeating himself and learning if he's entombed, he's suddenly weak again, which the whole explanation before was it was the lack of air. So I don't think he'd be, I don't know, maybe he was immediately suffocated or whatever by being entombed. The whole thing was just a little wonky, and the Legionnaires won by accident, by default, however you want to phrase it, but not through heroic action of their own part. They lost Six Ways to Sunday. And I was disappointed with that. Yes, it sets Mordru up as a big, viable threat, but it's not a heroic ending to the story. And given we had three other chapters that were all building up to this, I was really expecting them and wanting them to have landed the ending better than they did. So all in all, a little disappointed, but this is the first story arc of Mordru. It gets revamped, retold in other incarnations of the Legion. he is one of the bigger, badder threats because he is so powerful. Because, again, technically he won on his first outing. Once again, that's Part 2, The Condemned Crusaders, from Adventure Comics 370. And with that, we'll call it an episode. We'll pick up next time as we continue our look at the Legion comics in 1968. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.